Well, good evening and welcome to this Valentine's version of the Monroe City Council meeting for February 14th, 2012. I'd like to call the meeting to order and ask if Edie, you would take roll call, please.
Councilperson Barry.
Here.
Kempbach.
Here.
Williams.
Here.
Camp.
Present.
Davis.
Present.
Hanford.
Here.
Councilmember Gamble did leave him a word that he will be 5 to 10 minutes late this evening. Please join me for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Let the record show that Councilmember Gamble has not joined the meeting. I did get your message. Thank you.
Okay,
this part of the agenda is set aside for comments from citizens. This is an opportunity for citizens to speak to City Council on any issue except in quasi-judicial matter subject to a public hearing. You're welcome to address the council on any other subject. Please ask that you give your name and address for the record, and please limit your time to 5 minutes. I do have one individual signed up at this time, and that's Vicki Mullen.
Thanks, everyone. Vicki Mullen, 10312 210th Street Southeast, Snohomish, Washington, 98296. A couple of things. I see that you'll be looking at the Fremont Street Utility Replacement and Restoration Project, and wanted to let you know that the Board of DREAM has asked me to let you know that they prefer the alternative, I believe it's C, that is the one that will have it the most, according to the sub-area, the downtown sub-area plan. So, and then also in this, I'm looking at some of the items that are on agenda tonight. One of them is to they often refer to the downtown master plan through here, and it's like on that, you're looking at, when you describe in that, you describe the Fremont Street and why it's being done and how it would be a phased so that it would look like what the rest of the plan would be. And in keeping with that plan, I also see that you've got here that you've got that you want to, there's using the term aggressively after North Kelsey, making some changes there that you want to aggressively implement the downtown plan for community gathering and pedestrian amenities, which I'm sure, you know, would be, I'm not sure what we're considering that, but that's definitely a positive for the downtown. One opportunity that might be, that you might want to look into, is that school district property that's on Fremont. It has been looked at as the school district had looked at surplusing that at certain times or rebuilding it so that they could have their offices on top and the retail frontage or retail below. It is a large parcel of property and it might provide for a lot of different uses, gathering, pedestrian types of amenities, also parking and those kind of things. So it might be something, you know, to consider. But throughout this, you talk about the importance of downtown in, if you change the North Kelsey. And I can certainly see that that the North Kelsey plan, because of economic times, I see that as being realistic. I see that that's something to do. But I would caution everyone that open up plans. The reason I believe that the Monroe comp plan is maybe different from other people's comp plans in putting regulations in your comp plans, it does make it more difficult to make changes to it. And occasionally that actually is done because you want to protect and preserve a plan from easily being changed. The downtown sub-area plan was, you know, a lot of money was spent on that. We used some pennies, Penny K's potty fund money on it, for those of you that have been around a while. And so that ended up, they wanted to keep that, especially when it comes to sign code and historic signage and that kind of thing. And I see that in one of this, it talks about putting things on the docket, and it's got incorporating and implementing zoning regulations for North Kelsey and downtown master plan, and then adjust the sign code to enhance marketing for existing and future businesses. Now, that doesn't spell out whether that's just the idea for North Kelsey or if that's included in North Kelsey and downtown. And then it talks about North Kelsey design guidelines and downtown design standards remain in Monroe's municipal code. So I don't have, this is the first time I'm seeing this put together with North Kelsey as far as changing things, so I'm not sure how much change there would be. I just would like you to know that the downtown plan, I believe, is a good, solid plan. I think it was put into the comprehensive plan so that it couldn't be messed with very much. I think there probably was actually a good reason for doing that, so to keep it in there. But I do understand that it does make changes to it more difficult. But I guess I just want to go on record as saying that the dream and the work we put into that, we still think it's a very viable plan, and as you referenced it a number of times through here, I'm hoping that you all do as well. And if the changes to whatever was regarded in signage, I would just hope that it would stay so that we could continue to be part of that Main Street approach and be part of that plan, which makes it so you have historically, you know, historic signs, and we don't have some of the ones, we currently have a couple that are non- compliant with the code, and hopefully we'll be able to get those resolved, but we don't end up with like bright garish neon and huge big signs. We're looking for more historical and late signs, so I just like to keep that out there on the table. And we're always looking for parking. Anybody wants it? Parking lots on there. Thank you. Thanks. If you ever have any questions, please give me a call.
Thank you.
Thank you, Vicki. That's all that I have signed up to speak before council tonight, but as always, I'd like to open up to the members of the audience. If you would like to address council on any subject, you may do so by approaching the podium and providing your name and address for the record. Anybody open? Really? Wanting? Going once? Okay. All right. Thank you again, Vicki, for those comments. We will now move on to our business and action items. First is our staffing, design, and construction division, and that is Mr. Fowler.
Thank you. We're currently short two employees, a managing engineer, and recently, because she moved up to the front counter, a person who's helping us with the document tracking for all our construction projects. We've had problems finding a managing engineer. For a variety of reasons, we've had two rounds of interviews, unable to find the perfect candidate for an acceptable candidate, I guess. And we did find another, when we did the senior engineer interviews, we found two good candidates. So I would like, the first phase is to, I would like to have the council authorize not hiring a managing engineer and hiring a second senior engineer. And the hopes would be that over the next year or so, one of the two senior engineers would be able to move up into the management position. And then the other one is to, since the document, currently an administrative clerk helping with the documentation of construction projects is an administrative clerk position. We'd like to increase that to an administrative specialist position, because it is actually rather technical work we're getting into that they're doing, so it's probably an appropriate classification. And also, since it is a temporary position, it's a little harder for people who are willing to do that. So maybe a little extra money would encourage a good batch of candidates. So any questions?
Councilmember Gary?
Thank you. And Brad, I appreciate you answering my question earlier. So a good way to really look at this is it's the 132 minus the 113, so it's about 18. Is it $18,000 less than we would have been, than what was budgeted,
yeah,
would be spent? So in that sense, it says net increase is 900, but to me, it looks like there's actually spending $18,000 less than what was actually budgeted. So I wanted to make sure I was reading that right. So I appreciate that clarification. So, and if any other council members have comments, then that's great. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Fedevan.
Thank you. Brad, can you just tell me what the difference between the managing engineer and the senior engineer is?
The difference for, in the engineering part, it'd be the same. The difference is the management part, which would be the, you know, employee evaluations, making sure that all the projects are keeping on track on time, things like that, which I will still have to keep doing. But with the two people in the senior engineering position, we'll be able to get the projects, the engineering work done, which will keep us on track and getting too far behind in construction projects. And then hopefully, as those two positions mature, they can, you know, start taking over some of that responsibility for project management itself, and then, you know, one of them will show their aptitude to do the management of, you know, vacations, making sure that people are, you know, here together, not everybody's gone on vacation at the same time, and things like that, and then the discipline, and also the coaching and annual evaluations.
And so you feel confident that you can take on that role and continue doing the managing, you know, because we know how much you do for the city. Yeah. I just want to make sure you feel that you can handle that during the time when we have many projects, obviously.
We have a big push going on right in the next couple of months, but we won't be able to have a managing engineer then anyway. So I think after that, with the two engineers, it'll calm down a bit and not be too overwhelming.
Okay, thanks.
City Administrator Bradley.
I just want to speak to Councilmember Cutterback's comment. I've been working with Brad, and we've been talking a lot of delegating some of the tasks that Brad is doing to his staff, and so we've been working on that as well, just to kind of speak to that point.
Councilmember Williams.
Well, I'm prepared to make both motions, so I'll start with the first one, and then I'll go to the second one. So I'll make a motion to lift the hiring freeze for the replacement of one administrative clerk with one administrative specialist in the Public Works Department.
Second.
And then I'll also make a motion to authorize that.
You have to do one at a time, I think.
Okay.
Motions have been made to lift the hiring freeze for the replacement of one administrative clerk with one administrative specialist in the Public Works Department. That was made by Councilmember Williams, seconded by Councilmember Cutterback. Any other comments or questions? All right. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Councilmember Williams?
Motion to authorize the hiring of one senior engineer rather than a managing engineer.
Second.
Motion has been made to authorize the hiring of one senior engineer by Councilmember Williams and seconded by Councilmember Gearing. I should add, rather than a managing engineer. Any other questions for Brad? No? All right. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. Okay. Moving on here to final action items this evening. Select design alternative Fremont Street utility replacement project. Again, Edward.
We brought this to you before when we initiated the preliminary design for the project, and this basically is a project that's outlined in our sanitary sewer comprehensive plan to replace sewer line and install storm drainage facilities in order to remove a large amount of infiltration and inflow from the sewer system along Fremont Street. One of the opportunities of doing this now is to start the implementation of the downtown plan. So we have had our consultant work up the three different options that were included in the downtown plan to see what the price comparisons are to them. And we have someone, the consultant, who will be up to bring you through that in just a moment. And the other thing is that the big decision to make is which one of them to choose, and the deciding factor is pretty much money. We have the funding for the water, sewer, and storm from utility rates that we've programmed into our utility rates for our capital improvement program, and so it just depends on how much money we can find for street improvements to do the extra stuff. So, without further ado, hopefully this computer is still working, and we'll have to see if that has to
be. No, careful with him, please. It took us 3 hours to roll it up.
I failed last week.
But we trust you.
There we go. There's one.
Okay.
Rebecca from RH2 Engineering, who's our consultant on this project, and just, I don't think he's been to a council meeting before, is the other senior engineer that I was talking about, Scott Peterson.
Scott?
Okay, you're up.
Rebecca, one moment if I could. I'll have a, thank you. Now we can see, thank you.
Good evening, like Brad said, I'm Rebecca from RH2 Engineering, and we worked up the three different street outlines from your guys' downtown master plan. So the first one, alternative A, is pretty much just rebuilding what's out there, the two 10-foot lanes and then 8-foot parking lanes for a 36-foot wide street. But there is a planting strip out there currently. I think in front of the PUD, they're missing part of the planting strip, so of course we would put that throughout the roadway and then be adding street trees. So that's the plan view you can see there. And let's see.
Rebecca, one moment here. Councilmember Hamlin?
I'm sorry, can you go back one slide and just point out, say the PUD building, the old school building?
Yeah, sure. This is the PUD building, so all the hatching there, those are all buildings.
Okay.
So that's the PUD. This is the school administration buildings right here.
Okay.
That's their yard in front and the parking lot. And they have a couple portables. That's that tennis, like old tennis court, all broken up.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on, I think, well, that's that hair salon there. And then you have the other side of the street. A lot of more houses and stuff on that side. I think this is the law firm.
That's
the
law firm, yeah.
Yeah, that's the law firm.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That helps to visualize it.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't have any labels or anything.
Okay.
But these are the estimated project costs for alternative one. So for the design, we have a special studies, about $43,000, $43,393. And then a pre-design and design is the $212,141. And those are consistent throughout the three phases. So when we go and look at the other alternatives, those will be the same. And then when you get into the construction, that's where some things will be different. You have the three utilities that will be replaced, the sewer, water, and storm water. And so those costs are up there. And those include, since we are putting in the new utilities and we'll be digging up the road, and so part of that cost include rebuilding the road. Mm-hmm. So that is included in those utility costs because we wanted to show that that's an association where even if we didn't upgrade the road, if we're digging up the whole road to put the utilities in, there is some aspect of rebuilding the roadway. You know, we may not be doing the sidewalk. So the roadway improvements are the extra things like sidewalk and street trees that if we were only doing the utilities wouldn't necessarily be part of that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the separation. And then the last cost we have there is just engineering services during construction, working with the contractor and requests and doing that aspect during construction. And so the total for alternative A is $2,044,281. Any questions from the folks? Alternative B is in this profile views right out of your downtown master plan. It has the 10-foot lanes, just like the other one, and the 8-foot parallel parking. The only difference is you have a median down the middle of the street, and to add extra trees and greenery. One aspect I know we've talked with Brad about this is it limits the turning on that street then.
Mm-hmm.
Vehicles would actually have to come down and come around or use the intersections more than being able to turn. So that's something to consider on this roadway plan. And the trees that are in the sidewalk would have street they would have tree grates instead of having a planter strip. And so that kind of accommodates parking sometimes more, because then if you park there and then the people get out of their vehicles and they step right onto the sidewalk, not necessarily onto a planting strip. So that's another difference. Sidewalk widths, it says 60 foot plus right away. When you add all those widths up for the sidewalk and the parking and the lanes, it comes out to 61 feet. And so instead of trying to go after 1 foot of right away, which would cost money for right away, we would propose just to cut off a half a foot on each side of the sidewalk. You'd still have plenty of width for a sidewalk. And then you would have that extra foot of right away that you'd be going after. Any questions on this program? I'll move on to the cost. The estimated project costs for alternative B, like I said, the design, the special studies, the costs are the same estimate for that. Sewer and water, those are the same also. The stormwater changed a little bit. I think that went up because you have the roadway and the configuration is a little bit different. And also the roadway improvements cost more because you're adding in a median. So there's things that you're upgrading that aren't necessarily to do with the utilities. You're not replacing a median that's already out there. You're actually adding something new. And then the engineering services during construction. And so the total project cost for that one is, for alternative B, is $2,172,506 for that alternative. And then moving on to our alternative C in the downtown plan. This one incorporates a shared travel lane, a widened lane of 14 foot for bikes and vehicles. And then also the parking is still there and the 10-foot sidewalk. And you also have the street trees in the sidewalk with tree grates. And this alternative also addresses their downtown plan, because Fremont is fully supposed to be designated as a bike route, so this would address that, opening up the Al Borland Park neighborhood to help get pedestrian traffic as well as bike traffic kind of going that direction and maybe going back towards the park. So that kind of works. This works more into that. And with this roadway layout, you would be need to obtain 4 feet of right-of-way. And this plan view, since you have this building is right up against the right-of-way on the north side, and there's that issue where you can't really buy. We actually expanded the 4 foot into the south, and it has less parcel, I think, that you would actually have to work with and buy from for the right-of-way. So there is a little bit of right-of-way that would have to be obtained. And then we'll go look at the costs.
Rebecca.
Your question?
Yes, Councilmember Gearing.
Yes.
I have a question real quick. On the, I believe it was the previous one where it actually, because this adds up to 64, so you're talking about the 4 feet.
Yes.
Why, rather than obtaining extra, just make shrunk like half foot of the sidewalks in the previous one, why wouldn't we, perhaps kids, might be a little cheaper to do, shrink the sidewalks a little bit rather than
correct
four more feet of, have to get a purchase out from someone, right?
Yes.
Like that. So,
yes.
Maybe we just kind of hear the thinking there.
Yeah, thinking on there. The other one was when we added up all the right of way, it was like buying 1 foot, which, the trouble of the half a look could buy 1 foot of right of way. And then, does it make sense in that we could cut back a half a foot on each side, which really didn't make a difference. On this one, if you were to cut 2 foot, say, from each side of the sidewalk, because then you would, your street trees with your tree grate, when you have those in, which is like 4 foot wide, 4.5, so I think you'd be down to a 3.5 foot wide sidewalk from there. The ADA, I think so it squeezes it in, and I think ADA is saying, a 4-foot walk, unobstructed walk. And so I think that's kind of why we didn't really say we won't get cut down on this one.
One more, Rebecca. Councilmember Williams.
Thank you. Question on alternative B, where you have the tree planter boxes in the middle. What prevents that from moving to one of the sides and becoming the bike path instead of having the planters right down the middle? You know, and we still accomplish getting the bike path. We aren't buying any extra property. Was that considered? And
You're saying just having a bike lane on one side?
Yeah, if you go back to B, you know, moving that center planter box off to one of those sides and putting the bike path.
Ideally, usually you don't have, you don't have a bike path on one side, you have it on both sides. You know, if you look at WSDOT's design manual stuff, they say safety-wise, you want your bike traffic to be traveling with your vehicle traffic. And so if you have it on one side, you know, you might have bikes traveling in different directions also. So do we make it a 10-foot wide bike lane then? Because it's usually a 5-foot for one direction.
So on alternative C, is there actually plans for designated bike areas there? Or is it just that the lanes are so wide that they accommodate that?
The lanes are wide. It's a shared bike and vehicle lane. So it's not a designated markings on the road. A bike route, though, usually has signage showing you put the bike lane, or you don't say bike lane, you say bike route, I think it is, the signage.
So we'd have signage, but there would be no striping on the pavement showing that it's...
No, you could do that, but right now we don't have that shown on there. That's just a shared lane, and they say usually like with a shared lane in an urban setting, that you want to have it wide enough, you know, you wouldn't go with, you know, the 10-foot lane or something, because in an urban setting, you want a vehicle to be able to safely pass a thing on the side of a bike.
Okay, thank you.
So that's why.
Mr. Feilberg, and then I have a question for you.
In order to do real life, true bike lanes, you need a minimum of 5 feet, so that you do, you know, another couple of feet, and then, you know, get more right away, do that, do actually two bike lanes. Otherwise, the 14-foot wide lane, which basically you don't mind going lower than 10 feet wide for cars, and since there's probably going to be some commercial traffic down there, you probably want to be a little wider. So that's good for parking also. The other one is to not do the bike lanes, bike provisions, and just do 12-foot lanes, which would then get rid of the extra 4 feet if you don't want to spend the expense of doing the extra right-of-way acquisition. What we do is what they've done, and Seattle's done it, Snohomish has done it, is on the shared lanes, you have the little double arrow thing with the bicycle along the side of the road, and that sort of indicates that there's bicycles around. Mm-hmm. So if it's not a dedicated lane for them.
Brad, what's the, what in all of these alternatives that we have here, what most closely resembles what's on the other side of Lewis Street? So you've got Fremont, and it shows it stopping at Lewis Street, but then you've got Fremont continuing to go and connect up with Main Street.
Actually, see, I mean, because that's the same sidewalks. There are white sidewalks on that, on the west side of Lewis, and, you know, the idea is the downtown plan call basically calls for just to go all the way to Main Street and Fremont, so to have that as the sort of a bike. And the fancy term for it in downtown Plymouth, I forget what they called it, conveyor street. Conveyor streets to the people, you know, don't want to go through the dense part of downtown. They can kind of do the skirt around the side of it. Because it also calls for putting a signal at the intersection of Fremont and Lewis to help facilitate that.
So alternative C here is what mirrors what's on the other side of Lewis Street.
As the closest.
The closest, yeah. Okay.
And then, it has slightly wider lanes than what is currently on the other side.
And then what's the max traffic that if we were to, I mean, you got mostly residential to the north, to the south there's potential for commercial. or mixed use or something there, what's the max traffic that we're going to see most realistically?
Yeah, it basically depends on how it develops. You know, I don't have the numbers. I have to go look at the plan yet, but it calls, one of the scenarios has this south of Fremont Street being a large number of condominium apartment complex ideas. So there'd be a lot of, residential traffic in addition to the commercial stuff. So I don't have the number off the top of my head, though.
Councilmember Ketabay.
Thank you. Rebecca, on alternative B, the road cost was $266,000.
Yes.
And then on C, it's $250,000, but you have no median. Doesn't seem like that much of a difference. Is it because alternative C has the 28 for, it's 14 and 14 for the lanes, and B is a combination of 25? Is it the increased? Because the right-of-way is counted separately on this budget, so
yes.
That just doesn't seem like that much of a difference. But
are you looking at cost for C?
Yes, cost for C is for the road is
$250,000. Uh-huh.
And then cost for B is $266,000. Now in C we get rid of the median,
yes.
Which seems like that would be, and then there's only a $16,000 difference in those two. You have more road in the middle on C. You have 28 feet versus 25. Is that
the difference
too?
And that's the difference too? Is the road, like HMA and the asphalt cost for
okay.
that. And more so like when you're taking out that median, but you're putting in your roadway,
okay.
and you're actually making it wider too.
Okay.
The cost for the improvements that don't necessarily have to do with utilities, that's where that comes from.
Okay.
Rebecca, do any of these costs include the right-of-ways?
Yes, so the alternative C, there's the right-of-way, to obtain right-of-way, and that includes like an administration cost to deal with the right-of-way, and then also the cost to buy the property, which I looked at the appraised value, and then, I forget how much I added, but, I doubled that because that was the appraised value. So per square footage of how much property we were obtaining. So that's the only cost, because like I said, all the other alternatives, we wouldn't have to the right of them. And so this is alternative C's cost. Was there any question from both? Okay. The design cost, like I said, was the same for all three alternatives. Sewer and water and storm, the same. The roadway cost difference. Mm-hmm. You can see that was increased. You have the increased cost of buying the 4 foot of right of way, and then services during construction. So the total cost for alternative C was $2,257,669. And the next slide gives you a summary so that you can look at those numbers, kind of compare them. That's kind of what we're looking at is, well, what are we getting for the money? Because there is a cost difference. It's about a little over $100,000 between A and B, and then B and C another almost $100,000 there. So between alternatives A, which is kind of replacing the same roadway width and landscape, adding some trees. That's alternative A versus C, which you widen the road and you still get all the trees and you have added bike facilities. That's good for that.
Councilmember Williams.
Thank you. Brad, the prices that you were given on the agenda sheet where it kind of broke down the difference between the water, the sewer, the storm, and the streets. Mm-hmm. We're saying that water, sewer, and storm's already basically funded, so we're really talking about how we're going to fund the streets portion of it, and that cost ranges from $217,000 to $426,000. And in our packet, it was said that there's REIT money available next year of $270,000, and by 2013, there's some CIP streets money of $568,000. How much of the REIT money is available to use for this project? Is there any other projects that we have talked about using that for?
It currently is all available. However, this year you did use some of your REIT money for operations and maintenance of the Parks Department. So that would impact using that parks money if you wanted to do that again next year.
So is there a full 270 available that it says in here, or is it actually less than that?
Well, 270 is available. I asked Diane was here. She said no one was going to ask questions tonight, so she didn't have to come. I asked her how much was available, going to be available in 2013. So I'm assuming that's actually without divvying it up amongst competing interests.
Okay. And then the CIP streets money, another $568,000. But that's competing against all the street projects, correct?
That is the beginning fund balance in 2013 for this project to go into construction. So not counting any revenues that we might get from grants or other things in 2013. But yes, that's, you could use that money for this project, or you could use it for part of this payment on the Turning Place extension. So,
okay.
So
it is completely
real street, you know, just.
And then was there any consideration to, you had mentioned that taking alternative C and cutting the lanes down to 12 foot and not having the right of way, was there discussion about that when you guys were working on this internally?
No, because it's basically we're trying to keep as close as we could to the downtown plan. So, you know, that would, it's sort of be a cross between, you know, A and C, then, you know, the sidewalks would be wider, you'd have the tree plantings and tree grates, but you wouldn't have the bicycle accommodation in that. But okay. Since that would just basically, you know, take out another $120,000 out of the project from the streets portion. So
okay, so it really comes down to bike path or no bike path. At least that's where I'm getting at. So we're talking about, do we want to fund a $200,000 bike path on Fremont?
$100,000.
Well, the difference between A and C is about $200,000.
Right, but that also pays for the wider sidewalks. So the difference between B and C for street improvements is pretty much $100,000. So okay, that's probably closer to the difference.
And do we have any sense, this is my last question on this, but do we have any sense for the risk factor associated with purchasing the property? I mean, of all of the things that we were presented, everything else seems pretty constant between the plans. The big one is we have to purchase 4 feet of right-of-way, and what's the risk factor that's going to be, you know, a lot more. I doubt it's going to be less. Nothing's ever less. But, you know, so in looking at it, that's kind of what we have to weigh. Mm-hmm. Do you have a sense for?
I know we talked about that. We guessed the lower number or reached to guess the higher number.
Yeah.
So we've already increased it from our initial estimates. We could also do that. You know, just thinking off the top of my head, which I'm not supposed to do, but I'm doing anyway. Is that that could be the first thing we do, is approach the property owners to get the right of way. And, you know, if it ends up being this or lower, you know, go ahead. And if it ends up being twice as much, go, okay, never mind. So, you know, that could be the first task that we, you know, give to the consultants and ourselves, is to get the right of way and see how that works out, and then decide which one, whether to go 12 foot lanes or 14 foot lanes.
Okay, that may seem like a prudent step. I'm not sure the process that this has to go through, but that definitely seems to me like a prudent step before we go down a path that we really are unknown with how much it's really going to cost.
Because we have to, you know, we're in a good position time-wise because we're not trying to go construction this summer. Mm-hmm. So we have, you know, time to do that deliberately rather than, you know, rush while we're doing something else.
And does doing that, if we put that off to making this decision tonight till after we have information on the right-of-way, does that, you know, hurt the project from a time standpoint, or are we under the gun to?
If we have a direction that says C, and we'll make a determination of whether we have the bike lanes or not, no.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Councilmember Geary.
Thank you. Councilmember Williams, actually asked most of my questions. When we got the cover sheet, I had seen that it said, you know, the recommended action was for C,
mm-hmm.
But there wasn't really an explanation for that. It sounds like kind of what it's boiled down to is the bike lanes portion of it kind of makes it more similar to the downtown.
I guess a couple other things that we considered was, one is the median. If you're doing this commercial area with hopefully sometime in the future parking lots and things like that, you know, you come down, you've got to make a left turn into the business. you know, and since the intersections aren't wide enough probably to make U-turns, you know, then you have to go around the block and, you know, people just give up and go away. The other one is that having the wider sidewalks without the planter strips makes it more conducive to commercial traffic, is because, you know, people open their car doors, get out without stepping on wet grass, or if there's lots of traffic, you know, people walk on planter strips a lot, they get worn out and muddy and things like that. So that's kind of the thinking of why we're going to see if the idea is to boost the commercial vitality in that area.
I'm also a little hesitant with the ability to get that 4 feet, an extra 4 feet of that one. So yeah, I'd certainly along the lines of what Councilman Williams is saying as well, and making sure we can get that would be key in wanting to fully move forward, I think, with plenty for myself. But otherwise, you know, I do like what I see on there. I'd be fine with the bike lanes, I think, as well. That'd be a problem at all. But if we don't have to buy 4 feet and we can still make it look great, then I mean that's less money spent, and I think that's wise as well. So, thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Cuddeback?
Oh, you turned your light off.
He asked my questions.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Brad, let me make sure I understand the funding. Because it says in here funding for the sewer, water, storm portions have been programmed in the capital improvement plan. Does that include the design, the pre-design, all of that? Does it include the engineering services during construction? Okay, so the only cost not covered, if I'm looking at alternative C, would be road and right-of-way. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, so that totals $370,000. We have, according to this, possibly at a CIP and... Okay, go.
If you look at your cover sheet, it's $426,000. Because some of the design costs actually belong to the roads.
So okay, so you're breaking apart parts. Okay, yeah. So the total cost is what?
$426,000 for student.
Okay. Oh, okay. Okay, that's the extra cost then. Okay, thanks. So out of the REIT and the CIP, we have about $838,000. So we're looking at possibly that $426,000, depleting those funds to that degree. But we do have enough in there if we were to use it.
Yes.
But there is a possibility of getting grants and other...
Yeah, investigating grants and things like that. So.
Okay.
Since the timeline is extended out, I mean, I think
right. Well, looking at this, I mean, I am totally in support of moving forward with alternative C. I do agree you have to look at the right of way and see what the costs are of that. If it turns out to be much greater than this, then we would have to kind of come back and go, okay, should we still move forward or not? But, I mean, having an opportunity to put some of the downtown plan in effect and putting in those bike paths around Al Borland, I think, you know, we have an opportunity here and we need to take it as long as the right-of-way costs aren't much, much greater than what we have here. So that's my input. Thanks, Brad.
So I guess for this evening's purposes or for clarification for staff, we're looking for a motion to direct staff to move forward with one of these alternatives. I think that it would be important for City Council to also determine what that ceiling is. If it's 120-230, that's all that we have for right-of-way, then staff knows that that's all we have and we're going out. Or if you'd like to make that $100,000 and knowing that we've got a little fudge room there for somebody who may not be listening to the tapes to know that we've got all this that money, that would give staff. So
I would assume that we would just find out how much it's going to cost and come back to the council, and then they can say 12-foot lanes or 14-foot lanes, rather than actually having a limit or anything like that influence people's think how much they can ask for.
Okay. So tonight, really, then, we don't necessarily need a motion. We just need to have a consensus on directing staff to move forward. Then I guess.
Yeah.
Councilmember Williams?
Thank you. I was going to say that my motion or my consensus, however we want to do it, is that we go forward with alternative C, but that we get information before we officially just say we're going to buy the right-of-way at any cost.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you want to clarify that motion for us?
It's a consensus more than a motion.
Okay, it's a consensus. So we'll move forward with alternative C, the process. of discovery what the right-of-way cost will be, bring that information back to council. At that time, we'll determine whether or not we go ahead with 14 or 12 foot. But thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Scott as well, thank you for your efforts in this
thank
process.
Thank you, Scott.
Okay, Mr. Popelka.
No, I'm not kidding you.
Amend the 2012 comprehensive plan.
Thank you, Mayor. Council met last weekend. Recall, we discussed the North Kelsey plan, the downtown plan, the urban core, all these projects. We also talked a good bit about the process and the timelines, and we're back tonight to seek your approval to amend the comprehensive plan amendment document. So we can have this comprehensive plan change regarding North Kelsey and the downtown plans as the first step toward moving ahead with some of these ideas. As you know, the comp plan adopted by reference the entire North Kelsey plan and the entire downtown plan, and our position that the comp plan is a policy document, and therefore we can't change the North Kelsey plan without going through the comp plan amendment process once a year. But this is an exercise that would remove that the regulations, that regulatory language, because in my experience, in my opinion, regulations don't belong in the comp plan. The policy drives the regulations. And the North Kelsey guidelines or the downtown design guidelines and light standards are referenced and adopted in the municipal code, zoning, and they will remain in force. But doing this will give us the ability to go in and surgically cut the comp plan. That we haven't had time to go in and really define exactly what parts are going to be revised or changed, other than to say removing the regulatory and the references to the public amenities, the village green, pedestrian orientation, that is such a huge part of the concept at this point, which is not fully. So it's a matter of, like, say, going in and doing some cutting to trim that comp plan to take it back to what it should be, policy. And those policies should be strong enough and clear enough to drive the regulations, most of which are in place already. So that's what we're here for. The approval to move ahead with this first step.
Okay.
And we'll be back to schedule the cover sheet with the commission for the final changes.
You, Councilmember Gearing?
Thank you. I do see that the work program looks, the things that were on it are still on it, which I think is absolutely great. I appreciate that the commission is their hard work and what they're doing and the extra time it may take to get this done, all these things. And so I just want to say that I do very much appreciate that. And with that, I'll move to amend the 2012 work program, amending the 2012 comprehensive plan amendment docket to add CPA 2012D, revision of regulatory language for the North Kelsey Development Plan and Downtown Master Plan, and establishing deadlines for Planning Commission recommendations to the City Council as scheduled in this report.
Second.
All right, motion's been made by Councilmember Gearing, seconded by Councilmember Camp. I need to read the whole motion again, Edie, or did you get it?
Yeah.
All right.
She knew what she was doing.
Councilmember Cutterback.
Thank you. Paul, I want to make sure I understand this. So revising the comp plan to remove, kind of the language about Kelsey doesn't per se change the Kelsey plan. That still is then an additional step after that. Correct?
Yes, correct. If we remove the Kelsey plan from the comprehensive plan, it will simply be detached, but it will still be in force. So then I think we take a subsequent action to amend, yeah, basically, yes, if it could happen concurrently. The North Kelsey plan will be detached from the complex. That would happen on July 3rd. And I think it would take subsequent action to that to amend the North Kelsey plan. So it has been removed from that now bottom line.
Okay, that's what I understood. This step is necessary to look at whether we want to change the Kelsey plan or revise it or...
It's almost like processing a land use amendment and a zoning amendment simultaneously. This is kind of the same principle that we'll process the comp plan change and then we can do it at the same time or we can do it after the fact to change the zoning aspect. So I think that way it's very simple.
So I know that Planning Commission met last night and you had discussion around this. What was their feedback on going in this direction or, you know, being able to accomplish this in the work plan? And
well, we had some discussion about that last night. It was not last night. Yes.
Is it last night?
Yeah. We had some discussion about amending the comp plan and the intents behind it, and the schedule and the deadlines. I think that the commission is pretty much on board with an understanding how the North Kelsey plan cannot be realized as a basis for making this change or pulling it out of the town plan. And the role of these other projects that would happen as a consequence to changing the Kelsey plan. We also talked about schedule and how much time we have and a series of dates. We'll have an opportunity for several workshops and some public input, but that there are some fairly hard and fast deadlines here since the comp plan will only be changed once a year and all of these amendments have to be considered together. So staff is going to work to make these deadlines, and then the commission is going to follow along with that. They did express a couple of concerns or questions. One was about the public input, and one or two of the members of the commission have been pretty deeply involved in developing the Kelsey plan. They wanted to ensure that there would be some public, transparent public process through the commission to explain what's being done and most importantly why it's being done, what the basis of it is. And the other is they had some discussion about wanting to separate the downtown portion from the North Kelsey portion, which I'm not sure if it was necessary, but the thought behind that was if we do this to North Kelsey, that's if there's an action, and some people see it as a negative action, then in turn we're going to take these proceeds and put them to work in the downtown and the work to core. So the first step is pretty well defined. We're going to do this to North Kelsey. The second step is still pretty conceptual. There's no assurance or guarantee that the money will be spent in this way for these projects. But the festival lot, the enhancements, the pedestrian enhancements for downtown are in that downtown master plan. The urban redevelopment, the housing redevelopment, Hill Street, that is not in a master plan at this point that gives it any legs at this point. But I think the concern is this is a very direct, specific move. What's going to happen with that in the future, we just don't know for sure. We have these concepts, but that's a long-range issue that we have to address. But I think it does make some sense to relate those two proposals, that we keep that connection between this action and this action. We're going to do this, and we'll result in this downtown. I think that's possible.
Yeah, and I can see the value in changing the comp plan. I get that. It's moving to the second step of looking at Kelsey and maybe revising it or you know, I've heard terms scrapping it. You know, I think that's an additional step that would need more kind of thought. I'm not in favor of doing the two concurrently. And then I do have some reservations about not doing the Kelsey plan without having kind of a clear definition of what that downtown plan looks like. I think investing money in downtown makes sense. I'm supportive of that, but I'm not clear of what that plan looks like, and there's things that were proposed last week that are still ambiguous. You know, being able to purchase the school district's property, the school district hadn't been talked to about that. That's an if. I mean, it could happen, it might not. So I guess I can move forward with the Planning Commission looking at amending the comp plan and kind of separating Kelsey plan out of that. But I think the Kelsey plan needs to be looked at separately and discussed in whether that plan is put aside or modified. You know, there's been talk about keeping the design code but getting rid of the Village Green. And I think that piece needs to have more public input. So, you know, that's, you know, those are some of my concerns about moving forward tonight on this to make sure that it is two separate processes. We can go ahead and amend the comp plan and get that done in July, but the Kelsey plan and looking at that is, can be, should be, in my mind, a separate process, which you said doing the comp plan first, and then there would be a second step of looking at Kelsey and deciding what we do with that. So am I hearing that right? I just want to make sure.
That's what I heard.
Well, I believe the intent right now at this point is to basically carry them together as we would a land use and zoning amendment. It's good that you brought this up.
Yeah.
Keep some direction as to whether we should be doing them simultaneously and whether there is, whether we have time and effort to do both. The comp plan surgery is fairly simple and straightforward. Mm-hmm. The change in the plan gets a little more involved and into the more specifics.
Right.
So it's a matter, I guess, more so of timing. Whether it may have some consequence for the next core project or other projects that may get embroiled in this Mark Kelsey controversy. But that's, you know, we'll seek some direction tonight on whether we should treat them. We're working them together. The question is whether they should both be processed through the legislative process at the same time or subsequent signing things.
I think the intention in the discussions that we had is that they would be simultaneous for some reasons that have been discussed. Similar to, as Paul said, a zoning and a
land use
decision. It's not unusual that this process would happen simultaneous like this. It happens on, I think, a fairly regular basis based on what Paul's experience has been and others as well. So that I think is the intention. Now whether a council wants to move forward with that intention is what we're here to talk about tonight. The reality is that we can change or remove it from the comp plan, but that doesn't do anything with regards to the guidelines that are in place for North Kelsey, which those guidelines we've run into some issues with.
So, right. Do I still
have the floor?
Yes. So, as I was saying, though, but that plan can still be looked at and as it was mentioned before, the design standards might be kept. So the plan could be looked at and possibly done in a modified vision of it. It doesn't mean that the whole plan necessarily gets put away. I mean, there's options there, I guess, is what I'm saying. And I think it's important to have those options and to let the public know that there still are options, that this isn't kind of a done deal. And I guess my last question to you is, as this goes through the process of public hearings and all of that, as the comp plan has to, is Planning Commission then moving, by tonight us saying we want to go forward, is Planning Commission looking at that amendment and definitely taking it out, or are they listening to public comment, doing the process, and then is it possible they would come back as a recommendation and say, we don't think this is a valid idea? I mean, the process is still the process, that this is going to be a recommendation back to us in July of here's what the amendment would look like, and it still has to come before us. Is that correct?
Yeah, I believe so, and Paul can answer more clearly on that, but I just want to be very clear that the intention of the recommendations here is not to scrap the plan. Like, we're not throwing that plan onto a heap, a pile and burning it. There are a number of specific elements within the North Kelsey plan that we have every intention of keeping. Design guidelines, for instance, the open space, which has been talked about a great deal, while it may not happen at North Kelsey, which I believe is the recommendation, that open space is going to be looked at, reviewed, and potentially moved to another location. So there are a number of key elements to the North Kelsey plan that we have every intention of recommending that we move forward with, just not in the current state that the plan exists today, because of what we're seeing as a natural market movement towards an auto-centric or an auto-dependent zone, which has just naturally occurred over the last few years. So I think I am answering your question there, is that, yeah, there are some very, very key elements to that plan that staff and I have talked about. We will strongly be recommending keeping as part of the discussion, but making some modifications in the sense of where the the open space might be going, or something like that. So
that's all my questions right now.
Councilmember Gearing,
thank you. I appreciate your question about the simultaneous. That was good. I didn't think I was hearing that correctly, and I appreciate the clarification, Paul, that you brought as well. I'm okay with the simultaneous, as long as we have the public participation that's been talked about. It's key. People have opinions. Want to make sure that they're heard. But I certainly like things to move a little faster than the speed of government. So the speed of government's pretty slow. And we have an opportunity here, and I think we can incorporate all those things. Land use and zoning things moving forward at the same time is a regular practice. But as long as we have the public participation that's been talked about, then I think simultaneous would be fine. Thank you.
Mayor? Yes, Paul.
The comment towards that, there's two things going on here. The first, of course, is the comp plan amendment, which is pretty simple, pretty straightforward. Mm-hmm. I think the commission is also pretty clear on what the intent and the action there is. But then in terms of the plan itself, really regarding the development concept plan, there's a lot of options within that. I mean, I know there's certain things that we think we want to address directly, and there are lots of other iterations that maybe could come out of this. I think that's where most of the members can be, whether it's as part of the legislative decision simultaneously or not, but to try and address some of those options. We have a public hearing, or just simply a public meeting, but we say we're going to take North Kelsey out of the comp plan. My first question to assistance would be, okay, so but then what? What are you going to do with it? And you can't do the first without at least discussing the second, or the act on it or not. Part of that process.
All right. Okay. You do have a motion, correct?
We do.
Yes. All right. Seeing no more lights, we'll go ahead and take a vote on the motion then. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Okay. Chief Windsor. Thanks, Scott.
As all of you received, hopefully you've read the email that I sent yesterday of the resignation of the deputy chief of the police department, and that will become effective March 1st. I am asking that you lift the current hiring freeze and authorize the replacement of the deputy chief position. The money is currently funded, or the position is currently funded in the 2012 budget.
Councilmember Hanford.
I'll make a motion to lift the hiring freeze for replacement of the deputy chief position.
Second.
Motion's been made by Councilmember Hanford and seconded by Councilmember Cuttaback. Councilmember Williams.
I just have a question, and I'm only asking this because I know the person who's going to be calling me and asking me the same question. Was there a consideration of replacing this position with maybe a commander position or something less than a deputy chief? And if we thought about it, what's the rationale behind not doing that?
The deputy chief is number one. The pay is going to be the same if you're just talking about dollar wise, because you pay for what you get. Second, the deputy chief position is a position that I look at as the chief mentors that individual for eventual replacement of the chief, and that's why it's called that position. We've had two positions within the police department for over 27 years, either a commander position or a deputy chief position and the chief's position. So we're not adding additional people. If you also look at the LEMAP that was done a year and a half ago, they said this organization is extremely flat. And in fact, I think they made the comment they don't understand how either one of us can get any time off. So, but I don't know if I answered your question completely, but I think the deputy chief is an important position for the Monroe Police Department, looking at other departments that are of a like size or larger, they have deputy chiefs.
Thank you.
Councilmember Pettibeck.
Thank you. Chief, did the deputy chief serve also as the commander? Does she currently serve as a command?
Between she and I, we have taken the commander's duties.
Right.
She's taken the majority of them because we did not fund that position that we had 3 years ago or 2 years ago, something like that.
Thank you.
Any other questions for the chief? Okay, with that said, we'll take a vote on the motion then. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And Chief, of course, you know this from all of us. Please communicate to Deputy Chief Harris that her service to this department has been greatly appreciated, the value that she has had within the organization has been priceless, and our appreciation and thanks goes out there.
Definitely.
Wish her the best of luck.
I will let her know that, and I'll add very quickly that this is a person who has many, many talents,
mm-hmm.
and when she told me that she was furthering her career, I said, I've done my job then, and
nice.
She will be very successful in her new position, and very sad to see her go, but I'm very appreciative of the service that she gave me in the Monroe Police Department.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Denise Bremner, you've got some information for us this evening on email server.
I just had a breakdown of the different email options and my recommendation. There's a lot of information in here, and I'm not going to go through everything, but I do want to highlight a couple of the areas. The first option on the spreadsheet one is the option one was having City Hall and the Police Department all be on one exchange. change server and not go to Google Apps at all. But after looking at the breakdown in the costs, it's $23,495 after a total of 5 years. 5 years is actually the end of life for a server. And so I have a 5 year total for exchange in City Hall and PD. The option two would be exchange with a redundant server for built-in disaster recovery. That is doubles. Option three comes up to $30,000 after 5 years, and that would be for CH and PD. Option four would be an internal PD exchange server, and the city continue to go to Google Apps. That would be a total of $27,425. Again, the next one, option five, is the redundancy. Option six was new. I did go out to different agencies, and for option six, I made contact with Snohomish DIS, and they would do hosting exchange for $108 per year for 47 users in the police department. Some of these options, depending upon if we're doing per user account or we're doing client access licenses for the desktop. So that's why there's some things that change a little bit. For an outsourcing service such as Google Apps or for Snohomish County, they're doing it on a per user basis rather than a per desktop basis. So that's why there's some variations in the numbers right now, because I was either doing it on a desktop basis or a user basis, depending upon what is most cost effective for the city. So after looking at all the different options and looking at the alternatives, I did do a breakdown of the options with the pros and the cons for each option. And after looking at everything, I believe that option number four would be the best. Based on the cost and the security, the best option would be to purchase a new Exchange 2010 server system for the police department, and at this time not purchase a newer redundant system. What we could do, I'm hoping that next year maybe things will change and we can either move everybody to Google Apps, or we can get a redundant system at that time, based on resources. For right now, what we could do is I could back up, have emails stored under PST files, or things like that. So all their emails would be stored on a shared network drive and backed up every night. The cost of a new Exchange software is $7,425. System has a 5 year lifespan. Hopefully 5 years from now, Google have clearly met the criminal justice information security requirements established by the FBI, and putting the police department on Google Apps will be an attractive option. So then I just listed all the pros and cons of everything, and at the end of the document, I listed hardware costs, like servers, and what it would cost to purchase licensing, the licenses for exchange of the server, the cost per user for Google Apps, and then the Snohomish hosted exchange, and prices vary a little bit. But I think for right now, since the server is failing today, I really need to do something pretty quickly and something that's cost effective as well, and I think that's why option number four is the best. So I'm asking for Google to go in this direction with the exchange for PD, an internal exchange box for PD, and see all the devices.
So option number four there. Okay, thank you. Thanks, Denise. Councilmember Hanford. I don't know why I'm having the hardest time with your name. Councilmember Hanford.
Thanks, Denise. So I'm trying to understand the lines here, because all the way across, option four, you got a total after five, $14,851, and yet with $7,400 a year, it looks like 2 years worth there. And then option three, the numbers don't, maybe I'm just reading it wrong, but all those options, it looks like it's 1 or 2 or 3 years worth.
Yeah, it's a cumulative.
cumulative total. So for the first year, year one at the top, I have year one, two, three, four, five, and then after year five.
Mm-hmm.
So what it is, the first year, like the top on it, it's changed CHP, it would be $11,747.93. Year two, what happens spent since we purchase this item. So that's why all the way across it's going to be the same.
Okay.
Until you get after the total after year five.
That's a good question.
Because that's when
it's
the
confusing.
Yeah. First server is. And you need a refresh rate of 5 years per server. And so that's why it changes after that. But now when you look at the Google Apps, that or the Snohomish County hosting for UpExchange, what happens is you're paying a user fee, a user account fee,
mm-hmm.
year, and that's for every single year. Whereas if you purchase an Exchange server, it's not, there isn't an increase every single year. You buy the server, you buy the software, you have the number of users, you have your licenses, and it's one cost, it's a one-time cost, except after the end of 5 years, and then after the refresh. So that's why there's differences.
Okay. Thank you.
So your recommended motion tonight is to approve purchase of a new Exchange server for the police department with 30 licenses at a cost of $74,25.36. The City Hall employees will continue to migrate to Google Apps. So that recommended motion is the equivalent to option number four. Councilmember Gary?
Thank you. So the $74.25, is that is this an unfunded mandate? Is this, but some, you know, do we have a line item that where we plan for having to replace things budget-wise? I'm looking on here and I don't see. It says how much. It doesn't say really where it's coming from or how.
It's already budgeted. I have a server coming in, and it's a pretty big server, lots of memory processing, and that should be here any day. I was going to actually. I was going to use it for virtualization anyway, so I will just virtualize the Exchange server at the same time.
But the bottom line is that it was. This is a budgeted item.
Yes, it is.
And $74,25.36, if this is approved, yes. Will come out of this what was already planned for. Great. Thank you.
You still have the floor, Council.
All right, thanks. Well, then I'll move to approve the purchase of the new Exchange server for the police department with 30 licenses. At a cost of $74,25.36, the City Hall employees will migrate to Google Apps.
Second.
All right. Motion's been made by Councilmember Gehring and seconded by Councilmember Cuddeback to approve purchase of new Exchange server for the police department with 30 licenses at a cost of $74,25.36, otherwise known as option four. All right. Any other questions for Denise? Seeing no lights, any other questions? All right, all those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Very good, thank you very much, Denise. Okay, we're moving on to study session material here. We'll just pretend we've recessed and reconvened, or we did it right now at 8:19, and Transportation Benefit District. Albert.
Thank you. Okay, we've discussed numerous times Transportation Benefit Districts. We started back in 2008, when actually I think we did it before then. It was still only allowed for counties. 2008, the option came up that the cities could start doing transportation benefit districts. We discussed the numerous times whether or not to join with the county or not, or do our own. And the last time we talked, we had a direction from the city council to go ahead with the formation of a transportation benefit district, only allowing voter-approved funding sources and not allowing the transportation benefit district to issue bonds to go into debt. So I was and we're back at it again, looking for things to do with transportation. And so I want to know, and there's new members of the council, so I want to know if that was still direction, and if so, we will bring you back an ordinance to that on, I think I said March 13th, yes it did. I, however, would like to make the ordinance not be restrictive to allow for options at a future date for the council that happens to be in then, because the council gets to decide what we do. I just don't get to do it myself. So this last time back to council, we approved it. We go out for either a non-voter approved funding source or issue bonds. So, direction, please.
Councilmember Williams.
Thank you, Mayor. Brad, can, for the benefit of the newer council members and maybe to sway me, why do we need this?
Money. The as we talked about for the Fremont Street project, the basically utility, although we're not allowed to have a street utility, but it is basically utility, is the only one that doesn't have a revenue source. We have water, sewer, stormwater utilities that we set the rates in order to collect enough money to take care of those systems. We are severely limited by how much money we get for streets. The only thing we actually get dedicated to streets is gas tax money. And then whatever the city council decides to take out of property taxes. And I think it was 3 or 4 years ago that the city council, in the tough economic times, decided not to take any money out of property tax to get to streets. For the amount of streets that we have, we probably should be spending about $900,000 to $1 million a year on street maintenance, repairs. That doesn't have a funding source. That's in addition to money for doing other projects such as extending Hill Street or doing Fremont Street. So that's why we need it. We want it. So there's a need or not.
Let me address the other council members as well. Last year brought had a discussion with staff to bring this before council. There's two ways of funding streets, as Brad alluded to one of them. One is property tax. Yet the preponderance of users on our streets, city, or that travel through our city are not city residents, and so the impacts that are felt on our city streets are mostly from those simply transitioning through our city to get from point A to point B using Monroe as a gateway to get there. This would allow for the city to seek a sales tax that would be every time somebody purchases an item in Monroe, whether they lived in Monroe or not, those funds could go directly towards street projects in Monroe. So the thinking there is that we have people who come to Monroe for shopping and other venues, use our streets, but have no responsibility or no investment in maintaining the streets. So this would be a way to help provide for funding for our streets, but not demand that the city residents or homeowners carry 100% of the cost. So those costs would be evenly or more, don't particularly care for this word, but equitably spread out between users, not just property owners. And the 2% sales tax that we could or the sales tax that we could go for with the voters is 0.2% or 0.2%.
Which we
determined at current levels would be nearly 500,000.
No, about $660,000
a year. So the other one was to go out for a bond, but the bond then again is residents who are repaying those bonds through whatever form
property taxes.
So the question is, do we go on the property tax increase, or do we create a system that is a little bit more equitable in terms of spreading the costs out to actual users, not just the residents? Councilmember Cutback?
Thank you. Brad, you asked that we approve it without the limitation, because, well, I mean, couldn't council come back and change it at a later point? Anyway, how do you go about changing the transportation district, I guess?
It's more complicated.
It's its own...
Yeah, it's its own entity, but
right.
you're the board.
We are it, though. So that's what... Couldn't we change it at a later date to say we're going to take the limitation out?
You have to do double things. One is the city council would have to reestablish
right.
the district, and then the district would have to do what was now allowed for them to do.
Okay.
So.
It would, okay.
Two votes instead of one vote, I guess.
Yeah, I guess I'm not going to get hung up on the limitation piece, because maybe Councilman Williams will vote for it if the limitation piece is in there. You know, so looking at it like that, I mean, I voted for it last time. I think we need to raise more funds for roads. We don't have enough money. And I agree with the mayor and the fact that if you put it as a sales tax, it spreads it, you know, to more people who are in our community versus a property tax. So, you know, I'm in support of this. I do like having the limitation on there, though, so I'll tell you that. So maybe...
Thank you, Councilor Cutback. The other piece of this was that the county was also seeking to create its own TBD, of which we might have been part of. If that had happened, any sales tax that was generated for the purpose of transportation would first then go to the county, and we would get a portion of that. This actually gives us, with also less control, I think, over the funds. So by establishing our own transportation benefit district, we have control of those funds, and we can direct those funds towards any project that we would want, whether it's Tierney Place, the Hill Street extension. Now, we could also partner with WSDOT on the Highway 2, roundabout for the. For the bypass or the 520, we can commit those funds much more appropriately as we see fit as a governing body, rather than having to go through another legislative body or a governmental agency, that it being the county. So originally we chose to go not be part of the county's TBD, but to look at creating our own TBD so that we would have control of those funds. Councilmember Gearing?
Thank you. As I said last, I'm not in favor of doing anything that doesn't go to the voters with regard to this. I'm not in favor of a non-voter $20 license fee, in a long line of what else has been said. I do think the sales tax is more fair. Also with the police one that was out there this fall, it does spread it around a little bit more. Again, to me, it needs to be something that's voter approved. I think the last time we talked about this, the climate was a little bit different. I don't think I was in favor of moving forward with it last time, because it felt like it was just the wrong time. This may be a better time, and perhaps when, I guess maybe results have already been out, we'll see what voters are thinking about. You know, the school district stuff may give us a better sense of kind of where people in the community are leaning towards this. So we'll see where that's going. But if we were going to move forward with this, certainly the sales tax option along. Councilmember Cutback mentioned that as well. That would be my preference to and I think in that direction. Thank you.
Just for, as some of you may be aware, that the city of Snohomish created their own TBD and ran this on the ballot last November, and it was approved by the citizens there. The reason for that, in speaking with a number of the folks on that side, was because of the control that they had with regards to those funds and the ability to send those funds specifically to projects that were greatly needed within their own city limits. So,
if I
agree with Councilmember Gearing that I would not support anything but going to the public for a vote on this. So,
it's easier to make this palatable when there are direct things that'll be applied to. And when we're talking about east-west corridors, we're talking about improving trouble spots. I'm more willing to say, and here's what it's going towards. It's going to be going towards these things. That to me is something that is even for those who don't prefer to vote for these kinds of things, makes it a lot more palatable. So thank you. They want to see something done.
Thank you. Brad, just a brief history on how we're financing road repair and everything now, just for my own education.
Road repair, originally not.
Okay.
If you've noticed streets, there's little patches that are being done, rather than an overlay or a chip seal or something like that. Mm-hmm. We're just doing the really bad spots right now, and that's pretty much all we're doing.
We're actually taking advantage of a lot of the water and sewer work that we're doing, such as Hill Street behind the school. We took advantage of that project to have that street. Eventually, that street will be resurfaced.
Okay. So there are no targeted funds for particular projects like we've been seeing last week, correct?
Right. I mean, we have the capital funds, but there's no targeted maintenance money, and then the targeted money we have that comes from our mitigation fees, which goes from improvements. We have that money, which comes in based on what development happens.
Okay, so the TBD allows us to target the money that comes in through, and I'm going to say the sales tax, because I really don't think a $20 license fee would be something that I would even consider. Mm-hmm. So that would be directly targeted for a specific project.
When you set up the TBD, you actually have to name the projects that you're going to use the money on.
Okay, so would the sales tax, assuming there's a voter-approved sales tax, would it go on in forever?
Perpetuity.
Thank you. That's what I was looking for.
When you're done with the projects that go with your transportation benefit district to stay on.
And is that based on a collection? Let's say there are seven projects that are number one priority for the city. Those would be addressed through the TBD. Once they're completed, what? We just disband the TBD, or we go back to the voters and say, hey, we've got seven more projects. Do you want to continue?
We can do the same. Yeah. I mean, the TBD goes away. You can reform the TBD and say, now we've got seven more projects.
Okay, so it's limited. It doesn't go on forever. And like I said, it would not be a strictly Monroe citizen-supported item if we went with sales tax or something else along those lines.
And one other clarification.
Sure.
The only time it doesn't end when the projects are done is if you've issued bonds that you're still paying on.
And that makes sense.
Keep going on and pay lots back.
Would you yield for a clarifying question? Does the sales tax end? Does your sales tax end when the TBD goes away, or does the sales tax? It does. Okay. Thank you.
That was my last question too. Thank you.
Councilmember Hanford.
I believe all the questions have been answered. I'd like to go ahead and make the motion to direct staff to bring forward a draft ordinance establishing a transportation benefit district with no limitations on funding on March 13th. 2012.
I'll second.
Okay, motion has been made by Councilmember Hanford, seconded by Councilmember Camp, to direct staff to bring forward a draft ordinance establishing a transportation benefit district with no limitations on funding on March 13, 2012. Councilmember Williams?
Thank you, Mayor. Do we have the ability to include in that we do not want the ability to do a non-voter approved license fee tax?
Yes.
Okay. And then just as a way of background, the reason that we had discussed a while ago about requiring voter approval for funding and prohibiting the borrowing against future revenues was, it wasn't even almost minutes after we were discussing bond refinancing that we started saying, well, this could bring in, you know, $500,000 or $600,000 a year, so we could go borrow, you know, $3 million, and it just seemed like we're talking about how to get out of debt and avoid getting further in debt. And then the very next breath, we're spending money that is projected to happen. And so I would be in favor of it with those two caveats. I'm not going to be in favor of it without it, for what that's worth. But
the one caveat was that we would not proceed with a $20 tab fee without voter approval.
Correct.
And the second caveat was?
Borrowing against future projected revenues.
From the TBD. I agree. Yeah. That's a fair reason.
So are you making a friendly amendment then?
I will do that as a friendly amendment, yes.
So to the maker of the motion, would you accept as a friendly amendment the two caveats? One, that $20 tab fee would not be implemented without voter approval, and that no bonds or loans would be taken out with using this as collateral, I guess is a good word.
Yes.
Do you agree? And then the second?
I just have a question. So what fees would be non-voter approved that you can picture?
All the fees would be voter approved.
Well, I will accept.
That's a better way of saying all fees voter approved.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Okay, thank you for the discussion. Appreciate that, Brad. And seeing no lights, then we'll go ahead and take a vote on the motion. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, staff reports. Denise, anything further this evening? Jeff, anything to report this evening?
No.
Okay. Chief? Ben? No? Deb? Anything from you? Since you're here, I'm going to ask. Yeah. And Brad, anything further for council this evening?
No.
All right, City Mid. Yes?
I did have one thing with relation to the TBD. The legislature is debating this issue right now to expand the funding sources that would be available. Specifically, they're talking about increasing the NVET data fee from $20 to $40. They're also adding the potential for local option gas tax would be implemented at 1 cent, 2 cents, or 3 cents that could be imposed at the local level through councilmatic action. So you might want to if you get a chance, pull up the legislative website and take a look at that. The intent is to, the counties are pushing hard, and I know some of the larger cities are pushing for more funding options rather than fewer funding options.
The options you're speaking of, though, those are councilmatic actions, correct?
Well, councilmatic actions, but they can always be sent to the voters for approval, even if they are councilmatic.
Okay. Thank you. City Administrator Rattle.
Thank you, Mayor. Draft agenda for February 21st. Under announcements and presentations, we have a proclamation, National Engineers Week. We have our consent agenda. Under new business, we have a joint council ethics board discussion. Number two, select option for 2012 spring cleanup event. Number three is new city website demo, which we had talked about a few weeks ago. Number four is an introduction to mixed use setbacks. Five, introduction Roosevelt Ridge proposed zoning regulations. Number six, introduction amend airport compatibility zone notice requirements. Number seven is sign code amendments. Under final action, we have authorized mayor to sign addendum to the contract for prosecuting attorney services.
This stuff is wrong.
Number two, ordinance regulating door-to-door solicitation. That's the second and final reading. Number three is table Roosevelt Road rezone. And we have the draft agenda for March 6th. Any additions or deletions? Thank you.
All right.
My light was...
Yes, Councilor.
Actually, thank you. Just with the table Roosevelt Road rezone, we saw earlier that it looked like it was still on that list. Are we talking about pulling that? It looked like the list of what was on the Planning Commission agenda docket was still going to be staying the same.
Your Planning Commission recommendation that you'll be receiving that day is going to be
tabling. So that's what that is. Great. Yeah. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Councilor Gamble.
The Finance and Human Resource meeting on the 21st. Are you guys meeting on the 21st?
I was going to bring that up and suggest that we do meet to talk about the performance appraisal review process that council directed that committee to look at probably about a month ago. We just haven't met, so.
Sounds good.
If we could meet.
Yep, I'll be there.
Six? What time?
Yeah, 6 o'clock. Okay. Perfect.
Thank you.
maybe in the 6th, 13th, 20th, sometime in March, we can get something back. That was all I had.
I'll bring you back something in April.
We might table it. Who knows?
Staff, that you'll, would you like members of staff to be there? And which ones?
Well, I would assume Ben would be there and Diane, unless we're not dealing with any finances. We haven't finalized the reserve policy stuff, right? No, but...
No, if it's specific to HR, then maybe just Ben.
Just Ben?
Yeah.
All right. All right, so next week, 6 o'clock, Ben and Diane.
Are we saying we don't need Diane,
Ben.
I guess?
I
just
think
Ben.
So.
Change your mind, please.
You're on the hot seat, buddy.
Okay. Councilmember Cutterback?
I did have one question. I see National Engineers Week, and I'm curious, where's National Council Week? I mean...
Voter
approved. Oh.
Every 4 years?
Indeed.
It is not going to happen. Nice response. Yeah.
Good one.
Well, Council, anything this evening before we depart? Thank you for the discussion. Thank you for participation on behalf of staff and the direction. That said, nothing further from myself. We will call the meeting adjourned.
Thanks for the cookies, Ed.
Yeah.
Absolutely.